Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection. I'm so glad you're with me. And I have a very special friend, Reverend Sarah Bowen, and she is an animal chaplain. Maybe you have no idea what an animal chaplain is, and today you're going to learn what is an animal chaplain, what is the work that they do, and how can they help you. Maybe you are going through something where you could use the services of an animal chaplain, so we're going to find out all about that. So welcome, Sarah. Welcome, Reverend Sarah.
Delighted to be with you here today, Jeannie.
Yeah. Well, let's start with just the first question is, what is an animal chaplain? What do they do and how do they help people?
It's a good question. So as an animal chaplain, I support all sentient beings, all animals and humans, regardless of their species and regardless of their belief system. So an animal chaplain isn't necessarily a religious person. An animal chaplain is someone who's what I like to call a free agent. So we're there to support people in, you know, kind of whatever spiritual or religious beliefs they might have, or just the existential questions about things that are going on with an animal that you live with, or an animal who might be outside in your yard, or bigger questions about animals in general.
Wow. Yeah. So I think it's, you have a real interesting cross section because you grew up with a minister father. So you grew up in a religious environment and you also had a passion for animals. Was there one that came first, the passion for animals or the commitment to spiritual life?
Well, that's such a good question, Jeannie. That's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
So, and I'm not sure the answer to either of those questions.
All right.
But I do think, so I was raised with a father who was a pastor. And so, you know, that colored the way that we grew up. It was, you know, my father was very passionate about social justice and very passionate about helping connect people and community to different services that they needed for their own thriving and their well-being. And we were also, you know, often taken to weddings and funerals and funeral homes and hospitals and, you know, that kind of stuff on the way to swim practice or, you know, after school. So we got to see this other side of caring for people that many kids may not have if your, you know, parent was not involved in some sort of human services field. But right. I was so very curious about animals. We had cats we lived with. And my grandparents had a farm. So there were a whole bunch of other different animals that lived with grandma and grandpa. And I was also very curious about the little animals that I would see when I would walk home from school who, you know, met their end thanks to someone who wasn't driving cautiously. And so the story in my family goes like this. When Sarah was young, she used to pick up tiny little roadkill chipmunks, put them in her lunchbox, take them home, and give them funerals, which I did. And I would steal my father's clergy shirts and give them a little service and say, may the force be with you, chipmunk. And, you know, I was just very concerned about animal lives and also, you know, those kind of tougher, tender topics.
Yeah. And so for you, animals were your spiritual life. They were a part of your spiritual life, I would say. Is that correct?
Very, very much so. I mean, at church, there were many stories, right? That Noah and his big ark and other stories like that. But at home, there were, you know, my connections in my, well, I like to say in my habitat rather than my yard. There were the connections that I had to animals and they were very, very deep. I think as many of us who I know yourself and people likely listening to this podcast, we feel these very deep connections to animals in a way that sometimes as kids, we don't have the language for.
Right. Right. And sometimes the adults don't understand this tremendous passion and commitment to little beings around us. And it's not always easy to be an animal lover in this world.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about the kinds of things that you do as an animal chaplain. What are you called for? Who calls you in for what?
It's a wide range. So very obviously, you might think that if someone has had the loss of an animal companion, they might call an animal chaplain for some grief support or help doing a funeral or a ceremony or what I like to call a furry wake, mm-hmm. which is really kind of the celebration of life. Mm-hmm. So that's a very obvious area that we help. I also get called for questions. So kind of those ethical dilemmas of I've just received this diagnosis and I don't know what to do, or we've mm-hmm. just had a baby come into the house and there's something going on with the dog. What do we mm-hmm. do? Or mm-hmm. any of those kind of human animal, we might call them conflicts or tensions that arise in a house. Right. We also, as animal chaplains, work with people who work with animals. Mm-hmm. So I support shelter workers, sanctuary workers, veterinarians, conservationists, all sorts of people who have stressful jobs and they need someone to talk about what's going on at their job, what about their emotional well-being, mm-hmm. and they might not feel so comfortable talking about it at work. So contacting an animal chaplain is somebody who gets it with what you do and the difficulty of that that volunteering or that profession, and can mm-hmm. help you kind of sort through the emotions and look at some practices that might help for better well-being.
Yeah. Well, I know you've brought a lot of awareness to the life of veterinarians and the very high stress that they experience. You know, they probably went into the profession out of a deep love with animals, and then they find themselves in situations where they're dealing with lots of euthanasia or lots of no solutions medically. And, you know, they have tremendous stress. And so tell us a little bit about that, about your work with increasing awareness about what veterinarians are going through.
Yeah, you know, it started when I read a report that said veterinarians had the third highest rate of suicide of any profession. Mm-hmm. And when I read that, I was taken aback a little. And I thought, now, why is that? And Jeannie, you've just described some of the reasons why that can be so difficult. You know, think about going into a profession where, you know, you love animals, you want to help animals, you want to save animals, and yet our systems and our structures, kind of are working against you with that.
Yeah. Huh.
And so I started doing a lot of talking with veterinarians about, you know, hey, what's going on? You know, what kind of support do you have? And we started doing workshops at veterinary hospitals, at different types of clinics, and said, let's work on a couple things. Let's figure out how to get some self-care in here. Mm-hmm. Let's also figure out how that we might educate the people who come into a veterinary clinic a little bit about, you know, your job and what your role is. And let's also attend to that kind of the end and the loss piece, what I like to call sacred send-offs, and mm-hmm. how people can honor those beings that don't go back out the door, you know, the whole kind of thing. And we've had some really great response from veterinarians, also vet techs, mm-hmm. people who work the front desk. You know, there's a whole staff that goes on in these type of contexts that needs some support. So we're working on that. And we also do, we've been to the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association, mm-hmm. the AHVMA conference, and, you know, just talk with vets and say, you know, tell us what's going on. We're like that safe space.
Yeah.
To be able to help you process what's going on, whether you're, you know, you're a pet person or a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think most people walking through the doors of a veterinary office are probably worried, if not deeply terrified, you know, coming in, you know, because their animal, they're not coming because their animal's feeling well too often. And maybe there's that yearly checkup, but for the most part, they're in high stress, and veterinarians are having to deal with that energy and without any training in veterinary school for how to deal with the human emotional element. You know what I mean? It's like they need a psychology degree or something to help them. And yet, you know, they're without those tools because they were trained to work with the animals, and there's a human attached to that animal. And that human
there is. I often go with people to the vet. So if someone's stressed out about going to an appointment because of what's going on with an animal that they love, I'll go with them to help manage their emotions And to help with that connection through ever, you know, what they're hearing and processing. It can be so hard when, you know, when you start to hear things and, you know, so I think any support that we can give people for that. I read a report recently that, well, it didn't surprise me, but it said that cats get less veterinary care than dogs because it's so darn hard to get them in the cat carrier, right?
Yes.
I'm a cat house, so I know this one.
Yes.
How can we help people with that aspect of this too? If you have a stressful cat, a stressed out cat for, you know, more easily convincing them that perhaps getting in the carrier might be in their best interest today.
Right. Well, I heard Rupert Sheldrake wrote a book called When Animals Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, and he tells the story about most vets in England will not accept appointments for cats because the cats tend to know even before you get the cat carrier out. They know the night before you're going to the vet. So they don't take appointments. They say, well, bring them in when you can. That's
when you can, when you can. I love that. I love that. We have a big pair of ski gloves over here. One of my cats who was, you know, had a lot of trauma in his shelter. And so when, you know, there's a big set of ski gloves and a lot of treats that come out when we do that. But what you're pointing to, Jeannie, I think is, you know, that necessity of really understanding an animal that you're in relationship with or you're in connection with and trying to do all that you can, the many, many different modalities we have of being able to support that relationship in those stressful times. You know, it's easier for us to handle the kind of happy times.
Right.
But those tension points or those stressful points, being able to have a little support can be useful.
Yeah. Well, can I ask you a big question?
I love big questions. Go for it.
All right. Well, so the big question, and I'm sure people have asked you this a million times, but do animals have souls?
That's the million-dollar question.
The million-dollar question.
It takes a long time to unpack this. So most people want me just to say yes.
Okay.
If you just want to hear yes, I can say yes.
Okay.
But I'd like to add to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Which is, I'm very curious about the question why we ask, do animals have souls? Mm-hmm. And I think it's for two reasons. One is that some of us received messages growing up that animals didn't, that animals were somehow lesser than humans. Humans had souls, animals didn't. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeking some sort of confirmation that what we feel in our experience, which is that animals have as much value as or as rich internal lives as as humans. So I think that's one reason. I think the second reason we ask why do animals have souls is because we're concerned when they transition about the what's next. And if we have some confirmation that an animal has a soul, then we're more likely to believe that, you know, and to experience that whatever comes next is going to be a positive experience for that animal. Mm-hmm. What is interesting from an interfaith perspective, I'm an interfaith, again, a free agent, so willing to look at all of the world's wisdom, traditions, and philosophies. There are so many different words for this soul.
Right.
Soul, spirit, chi, prana, kla. There are all these different types of words, and they mean slightly different things. But they all speak to this idea that whatever that essence that humans have, that animals also have this kind of essence that we experience. Mm-hmm. So you may be, you know, soul may be your word for it. Know that for other people, there may be a different word for it. And if you can be curious about all those different expressions in the different worlds, wisdom and spiritual traditions, we can learn a lot about how we care about animals and how we interact with them. So that was a longer answer than you expected,
perfect,
Jeannie, for that big question.
Well, I love both answers. I love the quick yes, and I love the more nuanced answer. So I think that's really important because I think that people do struggle with this. I mean, some people have an absolute yes or an absolute no, but I think a lot of people are trying to sort it out, you know, trying to figure out what feels true for them and how does that impact the decisions that they make or the way that they relate. And so, you know, I don't think we have to have an absolute answer, but I think it's a good exercise to take the question out, shake it out, exercise it, see what it is today and see what it is tomorrow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that gives us a lot of information too about our relationships and how much we care. I think we ask this question because we really, really care. So going behind the question, I like that. Take it out, take it and shake it out.
Yeah.
Tells us why we care. And then that might lead us to, okay, if I care about this, what does that mean about how I'm in relationship with this animal? And so, you know, there's a lot that follows behind that. So it is a big question, and it's a great question for all of us to ask.
A good one to play with. Well, we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, I want to hear some stories about you working with people and their animals. We'll be right back in just a moment.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Hey, friends. If you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection, where I'm speaking with Reverend Sarah Bowen, and she is an animal chaplain. And so you must get some unusual calls because people come from all different belief systems and have all different needs. Can you share a story with us of a memorable experience with a client who needed an animal chaplain?
Certainly can. There are so many, and they're so fascinating to see the different ways and the different questions that we have. So I got a call from someone whose animal had passed, and she was interested in doing some sort of ceremony for the animal. And so she had reached out to her local priest and had asked for some support because the, you know, kind of the end last week was really difficult for her with her dog, and she wanted some support from her local parish priest. And he said to her, "I'm sorry, I can't help you because, you know, animals don't have souls. I don't work with animals." And so, and not all priests believe that same way, but this particular man did. And said, "I'm sorry, I can't help you with that." And so she somehow found my number, perhaps on my website or somewhere else, or on Find Animal Chaplain. And she called up and said, "I'd like to have a ceremony." And I said, "Great. You know, tell me a little bit about your belief system." And she said, "Well, I'm Catholic, but I would like a Buddhist funeral." And I said, "Now that's interesting. Tell me more about that." She described this experience that she'd had, you know, that had kind of, she was a little feeling a little tension with the Catholic way of perhaps doing a funeral. And she said, "But I have a friend who's a Buddhist who told me that if I do a Buddhist funeral, that animal could have a more auspicious next lifetime, and I would like that for my dog. Is that possible?" And I shared, in the Buddhist tradition, that is the belief. There is a period of 7 weeks after an animal passes called the bardo, where you still can have a connection to animals. You leave their food bowls out. You can dedicate the merit of your good deeds for them for that next auspicious next lifetime. And so we planned a Buddhist ceremony. I showed up at her house, and she had invited a couple of other people to attend. And they showed up wearing very large crosses. So at that point, we ended up with kind of a Catholic / Buddhist animal something or other that defies the name of what we might call it, but was incredibly meaningful to all who were involved. We did some beautiful practices with writing prayers and on beautiful joss paper, and then burning those. The belief in Buddhism is that As you burn those prayers, they go to the animal up through the smoke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then we had some Christian prayers tossed in there too. So I like this story to wrap it up, Jeannie, because it shows that sometimes our beliefs and practices that are meaningful to us might come from a couple of different traditions or a couple of different things we've assembled along the way in our spiritual journey. And being able to attest to our traditions and also be open to new ideas can really make meaning and really kind of frame that transition as something that, you know, might be something useful also to the animal past their life with us, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. And I just love the flexibility of really being able to say, what does this person need in this moment? And what does this, you know, how can we be of service to them rather than saying, well, this is the one way I do things. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Animal chaplains, the first thing that we do with anyone is something called, you know, a spiritual inquiry. Mm-hmm. So what we want to know is, you know, what do you believe? What's important to you? What, tell me about your relationship with this animal and let's figure something out that's going to be helpful to you. Right. People sometimes call me also after an animal has passed to ask me about what to do with the, you know, the animal who's still in the home, who's also grieving.
Yeah.
And so that can become another piece. And number one recommendation for that is don't remove all the Amazon boxes that your cat loved, because another cat may find comfort in those Amazon boxes, you know, that still smell like the person they lived with. So there can be a lot of flexibility in the way that we look at, you know, this time, which can be hard for us, or if you're supported, if you're supported, it can actually be a time of tender kind of beauty and reflection.
Yes, definitely so. Definitely so. And I know that from you've done small ceremonies, you've also participated in rather large ceremonies. I think you went to an event for was it a lion or a tiger? 5,000.
It was a mountain lion.
Oh, mountain lion.
Yeah. So those of you who might be living near LA might remember P-22, so named because P-22 was the 22nd puma in a national park survey. They number the animals. And P-22 had crossed 10 lanes of traffic to get into this kind of large park in Los Angeles and lived there for a decade, kind of coexisting with the people of that city who many came to love him greatly. He was still, you know, wild, semi-wild, you know, kind of running around and occasionally got into trouble doing different things. But he had gotten very sick and also had been paradoxically hit by a car and had a lot of injuries. And so they made the choice to euthanize P-22 and to hold a celebration of life. 5,000 people came.
Wow.
It was at the Greek Theater in that park, park where he lived, a huge open amphitheater. And the tickets for it, they were free, but they sold out in like a number of hours. So I flew from New York. I got a ticket. I flew from New York all the way to LA. There were a few other animal chaplains and animal people I knew there. And we showed up for this thing. People were walking around in cat ears and had tails on. There were kids playing ukuleles. There were people from the state giving speeches about the impact this animal had had. And now they are building a massive archway, a wildlife pass over that highway, that freeway in LA, so that they can have more safety for animals.
Good.
And less defragmentation of habitat. So we can have very small ceremonies and we can have very big ceremonies.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I know you're a squirrel lover. Can you tell us a little bit about your love and life with squirrels?
I am. I love squirrels. when I was a kid, we had black squirrels in the neighborhood we lived at in Nebraska, and they would go across a tree branch and drop walnuts on our cat's head as he was sitting on a picnic table. And he would look up at them and go, and they would look down at him and go like that. And I just from
did
my
they
hair,
have good aim? Did they hit the
They
cat?
Had remarkable aim. I was like 6 or 7 years old, but I remember, and he would, you know, he didn't want to cede. He was a cat. You know, he did not want to cede his property, right? Like, this is my table. And they'd be like, oh, let's go get the cat. You know, I don't know. These are the conversations I make up for them. But, you know, from a very early day, I loved squirrels. They were outside animals. But that, you know, what we call commensal animals, animals who live near us and in relationship with us, but most of the time not in our homes. And so that there's a different kind of relationship with them.
Yeah.
You know, and there have been squirrels in every state that I've ever lived in. Mm-hmm. And so they are in my life. They're outside the window and they connect me to wherever I'm living. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, they'll come and kind of, you know, look at me through the window and I'll look out at them. I call it meditating with squirrels. I'm not sure if they're meditating. I'm sort of meditating. Uh-huh. But, you know, they really connect me to this idea that there are many more animals in the world that I want to be concerned about and know about and be in relationship with than just the ones who are in my home. And so I talk about squirrels a lot because I hope that people will start to, you know, really have a lot of curiosity about who lives in your habitat and what are the challenges they face and what are the joys they bring. And squirrels are just bouncy, bouncy fun. You know, they just, to me, imbue joyfulness and happiness. So I know a lot about squirrels now. When I did my master in science, I specialized in squirrels. as my chosen species. But yeah, do you have squirrels around you, Jeannie?
Oh yeah. We do. We have little other things and I'm not exactly sure what they're called, but they're kind of squirrel-like, and if you're very, very quiet, they will sit up and look at you, and then they will go back down into their hole. So you had to be very, very quiet to engage with one of them.
Maybe some sort of chipmunk or ground squirrel of some sort.
Ground squirrel, yeah. It's like if you're not peaceful, they will not come near you. But if you get peaceful, they will. They seem to enjoy having a moment of just really gazing at you, and then they go back to their world. They have a little taste of humanness, and they say, okay, interesting, but I like my world better.
Well, and I think that you hit on a great point there, Jeannie, which is it really teaches us to, if we want to observe wildlife, we have to get quiet. We have to get calm. We have to take some deep breaths. We need to be still. Mm-hmm. And these days, we are not used to doing that. And that's so right. When we can, you know, and I'm one to talk because I'm flitting from here to there all the time. So being able to go, and I recommend people do a practice called Good Morning Habitat every morning and just sit outside for 5 minutes with your coffee or your tea, or if it's cold and you don't want to, look out a window and just attune yourself to, you know, the birds who are living outside, the animals, if it's snowy, the tracks that are in the snow, who visited overnight. Mm-hmm. And it can, we know, we have some evidence on this now that it can really have a great impact on our blood pressure. Mm-hmm. On our stress level, on our mental well-being. And it's very, very easy.
Yes.
Easy. Just a few minutes. Looking at green for 60 seconds can lower your blood pressure, folks.
Wow.
So awesome. Try Good Morning Habitat tomorrow.
Yeah, I love it. I have wild rabbits in my yard. I'm very lucky to have them. So they are fun. There are lots of life. Lots of life outside the window.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, how can people get a hold of you or learn more? Maybe some people even want to become an animal chaplain. So how can they find you?
The easiest way is to go to sacredsendoffs.com. And that is the website that has my book, Sacred Sendoffs, which is all about animals, as well as links to our animal chaplaincy training program at the Compassion Consortium and other workshops that I might be doing as well. And you can also go to findanimalchaplain.com, which is a directory of animal chaplains all over the United States and a couple international, where you can look, search by your zip code and see if there's somebody, if you have a situation where you think an animal chaplain might be useful. Click there. You can look at the different bios of people and who's in your area. Most of them meet by Zoom too, or telephone. Mm-hmm. So you can pick somebody in a different state. Mm-hmm. But I think those two resources can give you a lot of information about what we animal chaplains do.
Yeah.
And if anyone would like to talk about becoming an animal chaplain, on my website, there's a link there that you can contact me, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it. I think the more of us who are called to this work, to support humans and to support animals, the better. So happy to help with anyone. Happy to help talk to anyone about whether this might be something you'd like to add to what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you can find me on that site since I'm one of your students in your second cohort. That was really a wonderful experience. And I remember our first conversation, and I said to you, well, I want to do like all the spiritual stuff with animals, like all the deep loving, you know, getting present, all that great stuff. I don't want to deal with too much death. And of course, after I graduated and was ordained, my first call was someone who had two dogs that were very, very deeply bonded. And one was had a stroke and was ready to go. And the other one wasn't. And she needed help with deciding what to do. You know, should they both be euthanized so they could go together? And it was a very beautiful experience to be with her and help her and her husband with the passing of these two dogs. And it was a lovely home euthanasia. And it was sort of ironic that I said, I don't want to deal with death, but you know, but death is part of life. And it was quite a beautiful experience. It definitely deepened my capacity to have
it is. And I think, you know, we deal with both sides. We deal with the thriving and then also with the transition. But I always think for people, you know, animals, I think, you know, they most need us at that time that we might be afraid of.
Yeah.
And so how can we help prepare for that? And when we build resiliency and we see that as part of their transition to, you know, what's next or whatever's going to happen for them. We want to make that as beautiful and as wonderful and as holy and sacred for them as we can.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of, there's just a lot of strength that we can, we can build at a time where we feel we're going to be very weak. And I think, you know, being able to do that and see their full lives is so very, very useful. So the happy parts, and the tender parts, too.
Exactly, the whole range of experience.
That's right,
everything, the entire experience. Well, it's been delightful to speak with you, Reverend Sarah Bowen, part of the Compassion Consortium, author of Sacred Send-Offs, and animal chaplain herself. So thank you so much for being with us and for helping people understand what an animal chaplain does.
And my pleasure, Jeannie. Thank you for everything that you do for animals.
We'll see you soon. We'll say aloha for now. Thanks for listening to the Human Animal Connection.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.